Savvy regards once again to the staff of NEMATA. I'm here on the 28th of October, 2020, with a response to the Gnostic arrogator, whose initials happen to be, yet again, JL. To kick off, let me say that there's probably not any issue or consideration that you raise here that I haven't looked at innumerable times. But I have to say that the way you've approached these issues and framed them and developed possible, what shall I say, possible guidelines for living these roles, well, that's as good or better than I've ever been able to do working it out in my own mind. You add a little caveat at the beginning about busting me. Well, you are most welcome, sir. I do invite people to bust me on my pretenses. We're all in the same game as far as that goes, wouldn't you agree? However, I think the odds are pretty low that busting me will get us anywhere. The scope and depth of my self-importance is so enormous that any attempt to bust me is like a drop in the ocean, of course, but I welcome it nonetheless, just for the game. As far as correcting me is concerned, now that's a different issue. Correcting me on errors or things that I've said that are unclear, well, of course, I welcome that as well. Self-correction is a fundamental practice in the living gnosis today. So yes, as I sit here, I'm quite pleased with the opportunity. I wish it could be a back and forth dialogue to go over these roles. They really are important. It's essential for each and every one of us to have a clear definition of the roles we play. Since you are starring actors in the dreaming of the Aeonic Mother, well, of course, you need to know your role in that story and the implications of your role and the message that comes out of you, the lines you speak, the scenes that you play. So it's a most useful conversation. Now, I've got four pages of notes here, and they're kind of sketchy, but I'll see if I can hit the main points and not miss anything. And if I do, or if I haven't addressed something to your liking, just comment in the thread. Animist and Tantrika. Well, certainly, certainly. The Tantrika is an animist on steroids. There are many animists who are not Tantrikas. Well, many, I don't know what to say. How many animists are actually left living on the planet right now, considering the massive annihilation of native mind peoples, as he used to call them, of indigenous peoples? It's hard to estimate how much animism there is going. So the Tantrika reclaims, restores, and advances the animism that is natural to the human animal, to the anthropines. So those who live consciously now in her dreaming are animists to the fifth degree, because they not only have the foundation, which is ancestral and phylogenetic, in the endowment of native mind animism, but you have the entire program of planetary tantra to build it. And yes, it builds into something that has never existed before. And that is the planetary medicine that you hold today. So remember to stay behind the medicine. Now I'm looking down at three acronyms which are linked in a triangle. TGA, FGS, and OL. So the term of Gaia Awakening is related to the Fallen Goddess scenario, is related to the organic light. How? I have to say that I remember vividly that in the first year of the Terma, I looked this proposition squarely in the face. I realized, for instance, that the term of Gaia Awakening, with its three instructions of the Diamond Sky Dakinis, the name, the secret Dakini name for invoking the Aeonic Mother, and the vow, had no particular reference to the organic light as such. So I pondered that. Then I pondered the fact that the FGS stands on its own terms, independent of the Terma, and even independent of the mystical or telestic encounter with the organic light. So these three factors can be, at first, regarded in their independence of each other, and then in their dependence upon each other. Also, I would point out something you know already, but it's really worth remembering because it tends to be forgotten, and it's important. The FGS preceded the Terma. Now, the FGS is actually the product of my calling in comparative mythology and my calling as a self-defined Gnostic scholar. So I recovered the FGS from the source materials, and then I proposed to elaborate it and to iterate it from the cosmic scenario, which is now in the home story, all the way down the line to the present moment. Now, I was reviewing that iteration just the other day, and I was shocked to discover that we are now in FGS 7.0. I thought that we were in 5.0. Talk about velocity. So if you put this issue in the framework of the evolving narrative, well, then there is a point in the narrative coming forward into the origin of the Magian order, and then into the Gnostics who have been recorded in history, into the history of the mystery schools and the Telestai, then the encounter with the organic light plays into the narrative. The Magians, who were the root stock, the Aryan root stock of the Gnostic movement, had a narrative and a method. So when does the method come up in the advancing iterations of the FGS? Well, it does come up. So eventually it weaves in, and the two elements become complementary and interdependent. Of course, the Terma belongs, I think, in the sixth iteration. I'm not sure. I don't have the material in front of me. Because I think the seventh iteration would be reset and coming forward from reset. So previous to reset, going back to 1945, there occurred those series of events which brought the FGS to the attention of the world. And also during that time, say 1945 to 2011 or so, some Shaktas on the planet, led by the Nahual, were involved in reviving the method of the mysteries, which is telestic shamanism, which is direct encounter with the organic light. So then the third factor plays into this developing scheme, and they are all complementary to each other at this point. Of course, you as a teacher will be advised to exercise great discretion on how you introduce each of these three points at any stage along the way in your encounter with others, whether they be others in the school or others who are coming to the school. Well, next I see in my notes, Tantrika/Kalika difference. Yes, there is a difference, and there is a difference between the Shakta and the Kalika. So the Tantrika is the generic term, the umbrella term, for both Shaktas and Kalikas. You pointed out, I think it may have been here or later on, that there is an entire body of instruction called Kala Tantra. And you're right, your observation is correct. I wouldn't be surprised if a number of dedicated staff still don't know what Kala Tantra is about. Now, there are parts of Kala Tantra I've released, and there are parts of it that I have yet to release. There are moments when my Rigpa goes to Kala Tantra. I have to remember to get up that talk. The terma is the tray. Terma is the tray. And make sure that all staff have listened to that. So that gives you an initial description. It is the inception, the introduction of Kala Tantra. So some days my Rigpa goes to Kala Tantra, and then there are long periods of time when it doesn't go there at all. So when it does go there, I find myself facing a pretty formidable proposition. Something that comes up now and then, which relates to the question, the delicate question, about finding a consort that you raise at the end of this talk. Something comes up, which is another acronym, KSM, or Kalika Sex Magic. Now, I prefer to use a code term for that. And the code term is Kalika load, L-O-D-E. So this is a load, like a load of minerals in a mountainside. First you see just a vein of gold or whatever mineral you're looking for, and then you dig into that vein and you find your way to the load, the mother load. Of course, the terma of Gaia Awakening is the vein to the entire mother lode. But then there are modules within the terma, modules within PT. So, Kalika lode, the morals and method of Gaian sexual tantra. And this is a whole course of 8 lessons. So you see, these works are in preparation. One of the difficulties, and I'll advance this or tackle this right up front, one factor in my reticence to bring out the calico load to open that vein is the lack of opportunity to put it into practice. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that that lack of opportunity is considerable. So, of course, I have hesitation about putting out something, instruction and method, that no one is going to be able to apply. Also, bear in mind, and I should, I will note this when I load the talk, the trimmer is the tray. There's a bridge from planetary tantra to Kala Tantra. That bridge is the Kala Tantra vow. So Kala Tantra has a vow, it has three instructions, and it has methodology. So given that, you have the basis for distinguishing between a Shakta and a Kalika. So the Shakta is anyone who worships the power of the planetary animal mother. And you know, by worship, we mean reverence and autogenic interactivity. Simple as that. You could say that the Shakta is kind of like a bhakta, so there, which is a devotee. Bhakti is the Hindu path of blissful devotion to a god or a goddess. So all shaktas are bhaktas. It relates, by the way, to the Greek word bhakant or bhakante, which was the name for a someone in the cult, ecstatic cult of Dionysos. And there is also another connection to Kalika or Kala Tantra, which leads to yet another acronym, which is, of course, the KWP. So Shaktas can join the KWP, and they can place themselves in any of the ranks that are appropriate to them, based on what you hate the most. At the same time, if you look at the bands in the Thunderbird formation, you see that only the five forward bands are committed to the use of violence and lethal force. The remaining bands support those five forward bands. So if you're going to join the Kalika War Party as a Kalika, you stand, you place yourself in one of the five forward bands. Now, if I recall correctly, you brought up the notion that animism is the experience of the bond with the living earth and the entire living cosmos, but you make the bond through the earth, through the planetary animal mother. And you raise the question, are there people who experience this bond outside of PT? And you give three examples. Ayahuasqueros, the reindeer shaman who use Amanita muscaria, and the example of a man who leaves the system and goes to live in the wild, self-sufficient, directly in touch with nature. So the question is, do these three paths of experience, which stand outside of PT, represent genuine examples of animism? Well, certainly they do. I would never discount or dismiss such choices, nor would I consider the mindset of people who make those choices to be inferior to those in PT. In the first case, you might be happy to know that we have in Colombia, Miguel, an ayahuasquero originally from Chile, who uses the narrative. So it's possible that there could be a marriage between ayahuasqueros and PT, that they could become shaktas, planetary tantricas. Nevertheless, what the ayahuasqueros do stands completely on its own. Now, ayahuasca is one of the five top psychotropic entities in the body of the mother. And each of these five psychotropic entities has particular properties and uses. So the use of ayahuasca is primarily, as you know, for healing. But the healing comes with a visionary experience, which is typical and predictable. The encounter with the great Pachamama, Sachamama, Sachamama, Wisdom Mother. The encounter with the great luminous serpent of ayahuasca. And I can assure you, that is a grand and sublime encounter. So the method of ayahuasca, the ancient shamanic technique, works, and it stands on its own regardless of whether or not the ayahuasquero would recognize Vudasi as that specific frequency of the animal mother to be encountered in trance with ayahuasca. As far as it goes with the reindeer shaman, or those shamans of the Ural Mountains in the Slavic tradition who use Amanita. Well, Amanita is another one of those five top plants. What are the other three? I might not get this quite right. It may not correspond to what I've said before, but let's see how it goes. Well, the third, of course, would be the wide category of psychoactive mushrooms of the psilocybe genus, I believe it is. So you have psilocybe cubensis, psilocybe mexicana, psilocybe azuracens, if you can get your hands on that. Whoa. That's a powerful Maya Aztec catalyst. And what's next? Well, I've got the Encyclopedia of Psychoactive Plants by Christian Ratsch, R-A-T-S-C-H, whom I met in Basel at the World Psychedelic Forum. It's a massive body of work and an essential reference book for telestic shamanism. I'm not going to delve into it right now, but what are the other two that I would find in there if I did? Well, mandragora comes to mind. And what else? You know, I'm just going to leave it open. Perhaps you would contribute in the thread by suggesting what you think the top five are. I'm sure I'm overlooking something. Anyway, that topic, psychoactive plants, goes to the question of the role of the Nahual, or the Gayan shaman today, and where to proceed and how to proceed with telestic shamanism. Everything depends, of course, as you say so well, on the primacy of the divine feminine. So this brings us around to Sophianic animism, doesn't it? I love what you say here. She makes the call. Love that. And that is indeed the case. So the Ionic mother calls to her children, but they don't all respond. But those who do feel an innate bond with her, and so they are, whether they know it or not, Sophianic animists. Now, I would never qualify anyone else's bond to the Aeonic Mother. But then again, I most certainly would. Remember about the Nahual. The role of the Nahual is to study the approach to the unknown and to define syntax. The gift of the Nahual is freedom. So apply those two formulas to the situation of the average Tad who does feel and sense profoundly the primacy of the divine feminine. I don't question that intuition, but I do question what they make out of it. You see, without the syntax provided by the Nahual, there are going to be issues with make-believe and pretending and all kinds of New Age delusions and digressions. I'm sure you're familiar with those. So those who are candidates for Sophianic animism need to be guided, and I do indeed need to write a position paper on that very point. I haven't provided that yet, so I'm making a note about that. Hang on. So that document would just be a statement of the principles and practices of Sophianic animism, and it's long overdue. You are correct in saying that there is no intermediary in that bond. She makes the call. She reaches everyone according to their disposition. But once the connection has been made, some kind of guidance is required. That being so, we come to the question of the relationship between Planetary Tantra, which is the toolkit of the Terma, and Sophianic animism. In my initial notion of SA, I thought to exclude as far as possible the concepts and technicalities of PT. And I hold true to that approach. Now I see that my notes say that PT is not foolproof. I take that to mean that fools can get involved in PT. Oh, did you say foolproof or fail-safe or fail-proof? Okay. Does PT have a fail-safe feature? Yes, it does. And I was made intensely aware of that in the first 8 months of getting the Terma. And I did struggle with it, I can assure you that, because it seems like a really unrealistic claim. So let me see if I can clarify my view of how PT is fail-safe. You can get into PT as a fool, as a New Age pretender, and do anything you want with it, but it won't work. That's what I mean by fail safe. I had the image of, at that time, of a gun, a shotgun, with two triggers. So your finger is on one trigger, and the finger of the Dakinis is on the other trigger. And PT only works when both triggers are pulled at the same time. I have no concern about anyone co-opting or subverting PT. I really don't. They will just make fools out of themselves if they do not follow the program. So that doesn't concern me. They may fail, but they cannot corrupt it. It's incorruptible. And I know that's hard to accept, because if you make a study of any other spiritual, metaphysical, or esoteric system, program of occultism that has ever been developed, you can easily see how it could be or has been deviated. But that does not apply to planetary tantra. It took me a long time to accept that, but I speak to you now with confidence about what I'm saying. It's a joke. Anyone who tries to misuse planetary tantra will end up looking like a total fool. But then other fools may get on their program, and I could care less, or I couldn't care less. It might not be an appropriate disclosure if I offered a personal anecdote. You mentioned Kundry, of course, total disaster due to the failure of self-love. You know about self-love. It's the only offering you can bring to the Divine Mother, because it's the only thing you have that she doesn't give you. Now, of course, I can see in cases like that, which is extremely pathological, that the individual is suffering from inadequate self-love, but I don't care. I really don't. Another example, which is more pertinent, concerns a young woman who wrote me in 2014, and she had taken a course in shamanism with someone in the UK, down there in Cornwall, where she lived, in Penzance, and was really disappointed and dropped out of the course. She came to me with the intention to be an apprentice. So I said, great, come and be my apprentice. So she came to Gao Xin, and over a period of 5 months, 3 visits, we did some telestic sessions together. So I refer to her as my star apprentice. She was 23 years old, and she was born on the same day as me. And she had great, great talent. But again, the issue of self-love was a deterrent, you see. It was a deterrent. So what happened was that in those telestic sessions we did in that magnificent springtime of 2015, I took her to the top, and I took her to the organic light, and she experienced sublime beauty, surrender, wonder, awe. And all those experiences, those moments, were genuine. However, it would not have been possible for her to reach those moments without my immediate presence. And so, what happens when I'm not there anymore? Well, she can't hold the standard. Now, the fact that she turned extremely vile and turned against me does not in any way discredit or diminish the sublimity of the experiences we had together. What I showed her, where I took her, no way. But those experiences happened due to me being there. And so it was the presence of the Nahual that made it possible for her to transcend herself. And then later, well, fill in the dots. I take no blame, I take no responsibility for what someone does once they have been initiated. I take responsibility in every respect for the initiation, providing syntax, steadying the approach to the unknown. But I take no responsibility for where they go with it later on. As a matter of fact, I view such cases with ruthless contempt. It's not my problem. Moving on now to some other considerations of SA. Well, does the ritual of courting belong to SA? I would say most certainly it does, because it is a simple, delightful, and beautiful ritual that anyone can perform without being deeply conversant in other aspects of PT. So when I write this declaration of the principles and practices of SA, I will certainly include courting. The notes now say, beliefs, in quotes, in the FGS, the ethics, the terma, and the administration. Well, what's that all about, Rome? Well, I guess what you were getting at, sir, senor, concerns the relationship between the FGS, say 1.5, the home story, which is a narrative, and the other components of SA, Gaian ethics, the place of the terma in SA, and the administration of SA, which occupies a lot of your attention in your wonderful discourse, right? All right, let's see what I can make of it. Let's take the word congregation. It's a ecclesiastical or religious term. Those who engage with Sophianic animism are the congregation. But how is the congregation to be managed, and who manages the congregation? This is really a big question. I thank you for raising it. So I would say this, to be as fast and easy with the question as I can be, those in the so-called administration of SA who handle the congregation need to adopt a two-faced attitude. A Janus two-face. On the one hand, when you look at the congregation, remember the old saying from Japan, the samurai looks at the audience before he begins to speak. So with one face, you address the congregation. With the other face, you look back into PT, your involvement with it, what you know about it, and you act in a discretionary manner. So you don't bring to the congregation the full kit of PT. But I would say that if there are to be administrators in SA, which is non-hierarchical and non-authoritative, that they ought to be dedicated shaktas. The congregation consists of bhaktas, or devotees. So bhakta one face, shakta the other face. Remember that in Eleusis and other places as well, in the lore that has survived, you find the rosette, the 8 and 16 petals of the mystery cells. But you also find the lovely image of the caryatids. In fact, there are still 4 caryatids on a porch at the Acropolis. And the caryatids have a basket on their head. And in that basket are the herbs for the kikian, be they mushrooms or be they fermented barley. And so the caryatids are the sacred maidens who serve up the brew. And I have pointed out that in the sculptural detail of the caryatids, you find a 12-pointed floret, not 8 or 16, but 12. How so? Well, the advanced teleste at Eleusis mingled with the crowds when the gang came from Athens and they walked. And they came there in the fall and in the spring. And the initiates, mingling with the vast crowds, would use their discernment to select people for the first initiation. And they would select them in groups of 12. So there would be 13 participants, the Hierophant and the 12 candidates for initiation. So out of the crowd of thousands each year, the teleste, each of the presiding Gnostic teachers at Eleusis, the Hierophants, would select 12 people. And they would undergo with them the telestic rite using the psychoactive potion. And then they would determine from their behavior if they could go further into the exploration of the mysteries. And it's a good model when you look at the congregation as a dedicated shakta. Use your discernment. Use your discretionary talent to relate to those more likely candidates who can be brought deeper into PT, and leave the others there on their own terms, according to their disposition and their limitations. Proceeding in that way, I can assure you that you're going to make some mistakes. Unlike me, of course, who never makes any mistakes. But you will make mistakes, and you will handle individuals and the congregation unskillfully. But through those mistakes, you will learn how to master your role. So I'm on page 3 of my notes, and it says here, Nemata does not facilitate learning the FGS. Don't know exactly what you mean by that. So you might put a comment in the thread so that I can answer that concern more directly. I love what you say about Sarabaras. Certainly a woman after my own heart. Just electrifying, absolutely stunning. And you are right that she is a unique flamenco artist. I consider her to be kind of a crossover artist. She has obviously mastered all of the techniques and styles of flamenco, but she crosses over with it. She's eclectic and inventive in her performance of flamenco. So you use the term supporting characters in a film. That's a lovely trope. It's true that there are some stars in the movie, and there are extras, and yeah, there are supporting characters. So you could consider the congregation of SA to be the supporting characters. Finally, we come down to the crunch here, third and fourth pages. The question, in Sophianic communities or congregations, where are the adepts or adepts? Where are the advanced shaktas? Does a Sophianic community or congregation need to be guided or led by a shakta? Well, I don't know. And that's a question that has to be answered as Sophianic animism goes out into the world. It's a question that can only be answered, to use a fancy term from existentialism, situationally, as the occasion arises, as the situation presents itself. The best I can do at the moment, I've already done. You have the scenario of the vetting process at Eleusis, and the difference between the 8 and the 16 and the 12. So I would say there's your model. I need to add, however, that for me, for myself, in the role of the Nahual, the question of the role of the telestic shaman is open. Open for discussion and open for development. I've been looking at that closely recently. It came up during the Shodashi shift. At the end of the Shodashi shift, there was a lunar perigee at the new moon, completing the shift, very close to the star Spica, which we call Spora, in the left hand of the Virgin. And as you know, that is the star of the entheogenic mysteries. So it so happens that in my manifold, I have the planet Jupiter conjunct that star. Jupiter defines your social mission. So it has been my social mission to reintroduce, reframe, and reconstruct the entheogenic mysteries. It really is an open proposition. What happens if the Nahual today does a session of telestic shamanism? Well, your guess is as good as mine. You see, it's been a while, and the last session actually was in November of 2015 in Gaosine. That's when I got the instruction of the four winds, and that's when we saw the epiphany of Sophia as the great sky serpent exposing her fangs, and heard the sound of her extending and retracting her fangs. So if I were to proceed today, well, what would happen? Well, of course, I'd get an enormous download of DI, and so would the others in the session with me. And that comes with the responsibility to bring that DI over from the realm of the sacred to the realm of the mundane or profane. And it's always like that, and it will never be any different. The question is, how would a telestic session today be optimally constructed? For what intention? So you see, I'm living with this question right now. It came up during the Shodashi shift, appropriately enough. And I shall continue to live with it and report to you as I'm learning. All right, I'm on page 4, two final notes. I think you raised the question about courting. I said that courting is a ritual of Sophianic animism. But is the use of courting to command the Aeon Sophia or to bring a question to the Aeon Sophia for instruction by the light? Are those two activities inherent with courting? No. The congregation in Sophianic animism can do courting as an exercise of beauty, which strengthens their bond to the divine feminine. They don't necessarily have to use it intentionally. And that, again, is an issue of discretion, you see? So we don't know how this is going to play out until it starts playing out. But I would make that distinction clear and strong. No. Bhaktas in Sophianic animism do not have to be involved with intentional telestic rites or even desideristic rites. Because if you encourage them to perform desideristic courtings, asking for what they desire, well, that could mire into a terrible situation quite quickly. Anyone who doesn't have the discipline of desire is going to screw it up. And so that kind of practice among the bhaktas could easily lead into a mess. Another specific question is, well, what about the Gayan Tantric vow that is contained in the terma? Well, hell yes. If a bhakta in the congregation wants to do a courting for the purpose of doing the Gayan Tantric vow, full steam ahead. But that is the only case, that is the exceptional case when I would advise the practice of an intentional courting for Sophianic animism. Well, that about covers it, I guess. Your overriding concern, if I read you correctly, was about a boundary between PT and SA, and there are definite boundaries. I trust I've made that clear. Finally, and I don't really feel comfortable that I can go into this much, but you raised the question of doing according to bring you a consort. Right? Oh, by the way, I think almost everyone who's done a courting has discovered that when you go into the yarn shop, you have to sneak around so they don't see you and pull on the yarn that you're considering to see if it breaks. And you obviously don't buy that bundle of yarn. So you have to buy yarn that can handle the stress of the courting. As far as I can see, If you, any of you, does according to bring a tantrika consort into your life, and you find that the courting didn't work, you need to give some consideration to the territory and the game. Game meaning the animals that the hunter seeks, the animals that the hunter pursues. So we live in a sexual wasteland, and I'm guessing that it's not easy for the Aeonic Mother herself to find anyone that she could send to you. And that's just the bitter and brutal truth of it. Now, that hasn't bothered me much. I used to laugh when I was sitting up on the ridge under the Devi tree, chatting with my serpent advisor. And I used to picture these women showing up. And as they would from time to time, even though I was, relatively speaking, in retreat for 14 years, but I'm a human animal. I can't survive without human company and female company. So I had a laugh about that with Kali, and I pictured the great coiled Naga serpent of my guardian rising up, and here comes a woman, and I just pick her up by the ass and throw her into the mouth of my addiction. And of course there are consequences, but I don't care. I really don't. So I'm in it for selfish reasons, because of my selfish desires and my addiction, my primary addiction. There are three primary addictions. This also belongs to the specific dimension of Kala Tantra. They are the love and sex addict, the love and romance addict, and the sex and romance addict, yours truthfully. So yeah, I just feed women to my addiction as if I was throwing them into the mouth of the great serpent. Now listen, I don't advise anyone to take me as a model in that respect. But considering the sexual wasteland that we're in, the odds of you getting a compatible consort are extremely low. That being the case, I'm just asking for a friend. But wouldn't you perhaps find it, let's say, wouldn't you perhaps find it satisfactory, though not ever completely satisfactory, to just take on whatever comes down the road in the way of stray game wandering in the forest? That's about as much as I dare to say and care to say about this delicate subject of pairing up in planetary tantra. So, on that throbbing note, I'll bring this talk to a conclusion, and I'll be seeing you in the beauty to come.